Am I on? Can you hear me?
You're live.
I'm live and you can actually hear me. This is not my computer. I have been through a hair and makeup, as you can see. We just got that from live in the studio. Yeah, it sounds great.
Well, you look great. Your complexion looks awesome. Hair looks great as always.
thank you. If you saw me in the room today, it was wild.
You know, I'd be interested.
It was going everywhere.
We've got a few people from our Johnson City office where you were today. I'd like to see their thoughts on your hair. Maybe we have some people that were, you know, in the office as patients. Would love to see kind of, you know, their thoughts. But I think you look great, man.
Hey, you too. You know who you look like right now? Has anybody ever seen The Family Stone? You look like Everett right now. I want to go see those totem poles, you know.
I'm running for mayor.
Oh, we have another. I know this isn't until the end, but just know, scrap-a-dabs.
Oh, there we go. There we go.
And then Todd's in the background too. He's going to pop up, but just know that Scrappy's helping me out with my answers today.
We've got some, look at Scrappy.
He has a fresh haircut.
He's so adorable. Guys, that's Scrappy. You're going to see Todd here in a bit, who you've seen before. And then of course, Izzy and Ike will close us out tonight. But man, are you ready for some questions?
Throw it at me.
Let's do
it.
Let's do it. I'm going to start with, this is an interesting one that came in through email, and I'm selfishly putting this up. I wanted to hear your thoughts on this as well. I'm really glad that you're on the show this week for this question in particular. I know you've been talking to our provider team about peptides, kind of the future, you know, from performance medicine's end, how we're going to use them, etc. So the question is, do you have any update regarding the availability of peptides? And do you have any thoughts about the stem cell therapy that is available outside of the USA? And if I'd love to hear your thoughts on both of these questions.
Yeah, so there is an update on peptides. I talked to one of the representatives. I just got back. I'm sure Ben just told you. I went to the A4M Longevity conference out in Vegas with our other Johnson City provider, Fran. We had a ball, and it was everything. Like, I wish everyone could go to that conference because it really reiterates what we're doing in medicine. And then this particular facet of medicine. So you see everybody who's very like-minded, but the brightest of the bright. Dr. Oz was our keynote speaker.
No kidding.
And then the guy that did all the Blue Zone stuff, all the National Geographic Blue Zone, that guy spoke as well. And then this Buddhist master from Thailand, her speech was amazing. Everything was so good. So too, I did peptides. So what happened, just so that people can be caught up, the FDA put a category 2 suspicion on a lot of the peptides that we use that didn't previously have an FDA indication. So FDA indication just means that you can use it for something. It has gone through a government study, or it's gone through probably a provider sponsored study that then the government grants you an indication for, so that you can write it for a certain thing on label. It helps insurances with covering certain things. Somorolin, tesamorolin, and bromelanotide in the form of Ilisi, those have all been studied for other things, even though they are peptides. Peptides are just a sequence of amino acid that goes into your body and says release something. They kind of act like a hormone signaler. But they're naturally occurring amino acid sequences. So sometimes it's hard to monetize or to indicate a natural. But they have pulled a lot of them and put them on suspicion, because a lot of it is that they don't know what it does. And I think, I mean, you can roll your eyes at that if you want to, but it's not controlled by the FDA right now, so they've put it on suspicion. What they might be doing, just off the record and on the record, is changing some of the formulas a little bit so that they actually have very comparable, like CJC ipamorelin. CJC 1295 and ipamorelin was a combination that a lot of people liked. They might change the formula by one or two molecules, so it's a little bit different than CJC ipamorelin, but doesn't act differently, so that you can start using it and make it. I think that's what they're going to end up doing. That's what they're doing with a lot of compounds like tirzepatide and semaglutide, is they're adding B6. So it still works the same way, but it's not patented. I think that's what they're going to start doing. However, they have made a list of all the ones that haven't been on the category two suspicion that are similar to the ones that are on the suspicion list. So, and I've sent that out to all of our providers if you're interested. Like, there's a comparable BPC 157 oral to a lorazepam for the gut. Same thing with some of the other ones that you would commonly use. They have a comparative one to it. So there is a list available from Create Pharmacy of what you can use. And each of the or the performance medicine providers have that list.
So when you say they, are you talking about the compounding pharmacist and their, okay, that's what I thought.
Mm-hmm. Okay. Yep. So there, and each pharmacy is going to be different. You honestly, you can still get every single one of those peptides online, but if you find them online, I mean, we're not supposed to get it from a prescription. I think that's better, but it is available online without prescriptions for research only. So if you're doing research, that's probably what you're finding. If you're finding that they're still available, that's what it's from. It's for research only, for like veterinary use or something. So you can still technically find all those category twos.
Did they give a timeline for, you know, okay. So it's still not back to where it was, you know,
no.
4 months ago, 3 months ago, but that's encouraging to hear that they are moving in that direction to make that it's more available.
More available and things like it. So yeah. I think there'll be new ones that come out that have very similar mechanism of actions and route of administration. I think it'll come out very soon.
That's super awesome, man. Thank you for explaining that. We'll get to that, because there is I do want to hear your thoughts on stem cell therapy, but real quick for the people in the comments, if you do have a question for Andy in regards to the longevity conference he was just at, literally, I know it's very top of mind for him, so go ahead and put that in the comments. Anything, I'm sure there was a ton on gut health. I'm sure there was a ton on, you know, peptides, maybe even stem cell therapy. So I'll go ahead and ask you, any thoughts on stem cell therapy, and specifically this listener's asking in regards to stem cells that were made outside the U.S.?
Yeah, you know, I have like mixed thoughts on that. So anything outside the U.S., sometimes I'm like, I've seen some gnarly stuff happen, especially to like, if you see anything heavily discounted outside the U.S., outside of pharmaceutical drugs like Ozempic, insulin coming from Canada, I think that's a great thing. A lot of that's the same stuff because those companies give better deals or can get better deals for other countries. So like insulin from Canada is a yes. Ozempic from Mexico is a yes. Surgeries? No. I've seen people go to Mexico to get like gastric bypass for a very, very discounted price. Don't do it. Don't do anything like that. I think you're going to end up with more problems than help. There is, so it makes me a little bit leery about the stem cell stuff that actually isn't done here, but there's actually some really good stuff. I've had a patient that went to Tijuana. So it's like right outside San Diego, right across the border in an unbelievable facility for stem cell therapy and did incredibly well and goes there consistently. I think with stem cell, I think that would be my last resort. I think stem cells are great, but it depends on what you're looking at stem cells for as to whether or not I would do it. And if you're going to do it, I would look at, it's one famous place in Tijuana that does it. I would go there first before anything, just because I've seen someone and they're still alive after they did it. And they did amazing with it. They said it changed their life. A lot of it is with like intractable chronic pain. Sometimes too, at that particular facility, they'll do like fecal transplants for the microbiome into your gut. I heard they're using a lot of like shark fin. It's either the fin, some part of a shark. And then you kind of have to think about the ethical debates of how they're getting all that stuff. So I don't think it's ready. In my opinion, I'm not like itching to go get stem cell therapy, but I can see where people are pushing towards that, to where it's like that's their last resort. I would use that as like, I would try anything else before you go do that, but I'm not totally opposed to it. Exosomes are really big now too. I wish I had spent more time at that booth, but if you're asking about the stem cell therapy, research exosomes. Exosomes are available. I honestly need to do more research about what it actually does, but exosomes are very big now. And even with like facial treatments, with doing fillers and adding exosomes to them for improved collagen elastin production.
exosomes, just so for the
people. Exosomes.
Exosomes. Is that just starting with the X? I'm a
E-X.
E-X.
E-X-O-S-O-M-E.
Okay.
Exosomes. Yes. That's pretty big and available here in some places. And two, there are some places too, like a friend of mine does stem cell therapy for joint injections in Atlanta. Like it's here in the US. It's not only outside the US. It just depends on the type of stem cell that you can get. And two, technically PRP, something that we offer in performance medicine, that is a form of stem cell therapy. It's your own, and it's your own progenitor cells through the platelet-rich plasma, but that's kind of a form of it.
Is the reason you're not like, I've heard, you've probably said, and I know Dr. Rogers has mentioned it, you know, clearly, you know, stem cell seems to be the future. Definitely. And I think it might, is it just a tad too soon to feel super comfortable like with everybody or?
I think for everybody. Now, too, if you've had really severe things going on in your life, crazy car wrecks where your spine is like misaligned and like you're in chronic pain, or like incurable Lyme disease, like Lyme disease, and you have chronic fatigue from it and brain fog, like, too, like I can see where it is. The idea of stem cells is that it starts at the beginning and it, oh, yeah, a friend of mine, Lyme disease. Yeah, like that would be a reason to go do it. I think too, where you kind of get to that point. I do think just like Botox in like the early stages, people looked nuts. And now you can use a little bit of Botox and it goes a long way. I think that's going to be the same way with stem cells. Like you can almost let, so I say probably if you're kind of in that situation, just like Jack just put down there, like probably a good thing or modality to venture into, but not necessarily like something I'd seek out right now. I think that's very patient dependent. Like metformin, rapamycin for longevity, all about it. Widely available. We kind of know some more of the data on it. Easy to get, not a ton of side effects. Injectable stem cells into different parts of your body where you don't know where it's coming from quite yet. I think the technology is going to get better. And for the layperson.
Right. Right. That's super interesting. And that's something that I'm sure will.
This is an opinion, though. Yeah. That's people may think differently.
And we'll keep talking about it. As we learn more, you know, we'll talk more and more about it. But I really appreciate that question. And if anybody, you know, has any thoughts, if they've seen exosomes?
Somes. Exosomes.
Exosomes. Let us know in the comments because it's the first time I've heard of it. So thank you, Ange, for keeping us posted. Let's move on to this hormone question. This is something you're checking every day. What is the difference between the estradiol-free and the estradiol-ultra-sensitive for a male? And I hope I'm pronouncing that right. So there is a free estradiol and then an ultra-sensitive one. Am I reading that right?
Yeah, you're reading that right. So we don't use free and ultra-sensitive very much. We usually just use total, especially for a male. We just, even for females, we really just take total estradiol. And that might be a difference with different practitioners and companies that like to get a little bit more specific. Free and total just means what's bound and unbound. We use it a little bit more in testosterone with men because you can see you can have a pretty big total testosterone and a very small amount of free. And free just means that it's not bound to something, so it's free to do what it needs to do. It's available, if that makes sense. You're not chained up. It makes a little bit more sense to me with testosterone because testosterone is a little bit more consistent as far as a baseline or basal level. It's not going to be consistent when you're injecting it because it's going to change with what you're injecting. But with estrogen has different types. There's estriol, estrone, estradiol are the three main types. So there's different pathways for how those are made. With estradiol, that's the big one. That's the main one. That's the one that you want. And so between free and ultra sensitive, from what I understand, is that a lot of lab companies will say less than if it's not very high. Less than 15, I've seen some. Less than 5, I've seen some. I believe ultra-sensitive gives you the exact number when it's really low. So I think that could be helpful, but also, too, we want it above 15 anyways for everybody. So it might not be the most, I would say that depends on expense, but I don't think that has to necessarily be like the standard for everybody. For free estradiol, for women, estrogen changes a lot unless you're in menopause, and we are actually putting estradiol into you. So you can see how much of it you're using, but there was one lecture on testing for the female hormones, primary estradiol, progesterone, and even testosterone within females. And it wasn't mentioned that the free and ultra sensitive were really, they didn't mention them at all. And that might just be something that the presenter didn't use, but I don't see those being super high yield. High yields more, in my opinion, is going to be more total. For a man, what you're looking at is seeing the conversion from testosterone to estrogen, or the form of estradiol, which is going to be through aromatase. And aromatase is an enzyme that makes T turn to E. And so if you're a big converter, you might have a lot more E than you need. And that number two depends on the patient. I think estrogen is really good for men, especially too. It can actually contribute some, for some men, it contributes to libido. For others, it kind of takes away. We used to have like a kind of a blanket statement that anything above 50 needs to be blocked. There's some evidence now that like getting your levels into the 70s is not bad. A lot of it is if you're symptomatic or not.
Yeah, I would imagine that a lot of, like, some people might feel great at 65, and some people might feel great at, you know, 48.
Or terrible at both. Like with any estrogen. I think the blanket is you don't want to kill the estrogen, and a lot of guys do and feel better when it's killed. I just don't think it's, I think if you can handle a little estrogen, you should have it on board. But as far as what you would get out of a free and ultra-sensitive test for estradiol, I don't think it would make much of a difference with treatment. Because really what you're looking at with labs is, what are you going to change about it? Are you going to change dosing? What if administration? Are you going to block it?
Right.
That's kind of what you're looking at. And an ultra-sensitive, you're not going to make much of a difference between 14 and 15. You'll want higher than both of those anyways.
I love these hormone questions. Thank you so much for sending that in.
That's great.
Yeah, letting us talk about estradiol in particular, because we talk a lot about just hormones in general, but the really contextual questions I think really really help. So thank you so much.
Can I show one in the comments?
You absolutely can. Absolutely. There we go.
Angie,
there we go.
Hold on. Can I just pronounce my love? Angie, come back to me. Come back. Sharam, come back. Let Angie come back. Okay. Zoe, Brittany, get your mom back. Okay. Angie, we get to sometimes have Angie in our office. She's one of the best, not one of, she is the best freaking phlebotomist. I'm going to get emotional talking about Angie, but Angie, you know, I love you. Tell Admiral Chubbs too. I said hello. Tell the whole fam there. And to Angie's daughter, Zoe, just graduated, which is
congratulations.
Awesome, from Virginia Tech. But we love Angie. So I just had to, I never show these. This is so fun.
Angie, thank you so much for being
here.
We miss
you.
My goodness.
Come
this
back.
Is incredible. Thank you guys so much.
Send me a funny text.
I'm seeing a lot. We got Bentha from Abingdon's in the building. We got Kathy here.
Yes.
We got
Kathy,
Karen.
Greg. Ooh, Kathy. Oh God. I see Terry Graybill too.
We got Terry from South Carolina.
You sent some really nice. You sent some really nice treats to the office. Thank you, Terry.
I see Caesar from Texas. Caesar, thank you for being with us tonight. So good to
see you. Shelby is in the house. She made it. Oh my God, Shelby, we had a day, didn't we? We had a day. It was a good day. It was a good day, but we had a day.
Shelby, what is going on? It is great.
No one loves Christmas more than Shelby. I'm just going to tell you right now. No one loves Christmas more than Shelby.
I love it. I'm.
She loves Christmas.
Well, Shelby, thank you for being here. That's going to get me in the spirit. We're going to use this time tonight. We're going to get into the spirit. This is our last show before Christmas. I believe Christmas is on a Monday, isn't it? I believe it is.
I don't know.
But but guys, thank y'all for being here. Say hello. I see Katie Lynn's in the building from our Bristol office.
Katie
Welcome
Lynn.
In.
I saw Rachel commenting up here too.
Look at that.
Rachel.
I love it. I love it. Thank you guys for hanging out tonight. Scrappy's pumped you're here. Let's get to this is a Cleveland Heart panel question. Where do you like to see iodine levels for females in their 50s? I don't see iodine on my Cleveland. Is it there and am I missing it? So let's answer that question first. Is iodine on a typical Cleveland? Okay.
No, it's not in a Cleveland. You're not missing it. Iodine is usually done through the urine. That's usually a urine test. And we actually have a test for it. It's called ZRT. It's a laboratory test that usually uses urine. You can do a neurotransmitter test through ZRT. believe, a cortisol test through ZRT. You can also check iodine levels. I actually don't know. I don't know that level right off the top of my head for iodine. Iodine's really good for the thyroid. So I would say upper limit of normal is what you want and for iodine.
I will say,
and it's through urine.
The context, I'm sorry, I missed this part. It was in relation to hair. So there are some podcasts, and I've heard some of them where they've talked about iodine levels being critical for healthy hair. What's your thoughts on this, out of curiosity?
I think that's great because it has to deal with metabolism. So hair growth, nail growth, that means that you're metabolizing, you're moving things, you're converting. So whenever we think about T4 into T3, inactive into active thyroid, those are two measurable lab values. You have to have something in order, like a micronutrient in order to convert that. We don't have, when I was in school, this could be very different, but from what I learned in school, we don't have a ton of iodine deficiencies in this country because we add iodine to a lot of our stuff. Like iodized salt, like salt has iodine in it. Like we almost manufacture, sometimes with cereals, you put B vitamin, it adds B vitamins into your cereal because I know kids are going to eat cereal and they just fortified cereal means that they add vitamins to it. When you're drinking orange juice and they add vitamin D into it, that's a fortified orange juice. So I think iodine's just added a lot of things into the United States. So that's not a super routine test to my knowledge. Do I think it'd be beneficial? Absolutely. Come by and check it out so that we can learn together. And maybe too, supplementing. I know a lot of thyroid support has iodine in it. I do. Oh my gosh. I do iodine now for a nasal spray and mouth spray. I do. Hell yeah. I got on the airplane. I saw that. It's called Cofix. Come by and pick up some. Oh my God. Like, I can't say you won't get sick, but you have way less chance of getting sick if you're putting iodine. Even too, I had a patient today. Oh, I'm such nice people today. One of my favorite people. She works in the OR. She's brilliant. She's a nurse and she should be, she's brilliant. She says you swab people's nasal passages with iodine before procedures. Mm. You swab chlorhexidine into people's mouths before intubating them. He's like, if you're going to do that for a patient about to go to sleep, why would we not do that before going into an airplane or a crowded space? It kills viruses. So iodine, I think, is amazing. If I'm thinking of anything I'm adding iodine to, maybe having it in a multi or a hair-related product is good, or thyroid support. Maybe measure it if you feel like you have an iodine deficiency or you feel like you're not metabolizing well, you feel like your thyroid's off, and then doing the nasal and throat sprays with iodine for more antiviral.
And when you said,
and that's all I have to say about that. Forrest Gump, everybody. Forrest Gump.
One thing I didn't realize, I have a Cofix in my medical cabinet. Is Cofix is iodine?
Yes. Yes, it's an iodine spray. Hold on. Let's fact check this. And iodine. Yep, Cofix iodine nasal spray.
And that's something you could do for preventative measures for...
I've been doing it.
Really?
Yes. Oh, my God. I had to say it. Fran got sick coming back. God love Fran. I did the spray. She didn't do the spray.
Okay.
And I just saw a question from Jack. Yep. Yeah, I think you can. I think you can take too much iodine.
Okay.
I think so. I don't know. I would follow the directions on whether, because people were doing it almost a nebulized iodine. I would stick with the nasal spray or the throat spray and just do one in each nostril or two.
Let's see here. Thank you, Jack, for that question. I see Katie Lynn.
Thank you, Jack.
The burn.
Yes.
Yeah.
It's so worth it, Katie. It's so worth it too. Just like in aesthetics, Katie, there is no game without a little pain.
All right, let's get to this DHT question. What should DHT levels be for females in their 50s? What's your thoughts on this?
Okay, dihydrotestosterone, that's DHT. Dihydrotestosterone is converted from testosterone through 5-alpha reductase. That's the enzymatic process that makes T turned into DHT. Honestly, I would say upper limit of normal or within optimal range, which is kind of, I've seen different ones between 22 and 64 or like less than 20. DHT for women sometimes can be a little bit, negative, not harmful is the wrong word. It makes it sound like it's toxic. It just has can have negative side effects of DHT being too high. Because that's kind of with masculinization, increased oil, sebaceous glands, increased hair growth where you don't want it, and male pattern baldness where you, it's like you get hair where you don't want it and you lose it where you do want it.
Yeah.
So I don't think DHT is a really great thing to have in high levels in females. It can be measured. I would say an appropriate measure would be if you're taking testosterone and you're losing your hair, if you're having the abnormal side effects, if you're growing a beard like mine and you're losing it here, check and see what DHT looks like because you can block that. So two different natural products like saw palmetto, pumpkin seed, all work against DHT. And actually one of the lectures this weekend talked about like this guy was supernatural, which is cool. Not supernatural as in like supernatural, but like very into naturals. He said actually eating the pumpkin seed and not taking a pumpkin seed vitamin is even better. Yeah, he's like, eat an actual pumpkin seed.
Interesting.
It's just interesting. Yeah. Yeah. And same with like tart cherries. Eating the actual thing is better. But all that works is against the enzymatic process of T to dihydrotestosterone. So I would say an appropriate level is that you want some kind of in the mid-range or upper limit of normal without side effects. Because dihydrotestosterone can be very helpful to some things too. Muscle growth. It means that you have higher levels of T.
Super interesting. I thank you so much for that question. We don't talk enough about DHT levels, so thank you for sending that in. This is a quick one, and this could be for some of our team in the comments. Where can I get a PM gift card for the holidays? One, this is super sweet. We're flattered to be considered as a gift. But I will say, we've got team here, team members in the comments. I want to say you can get gift cards at any of the offices. Katie or Carter, you guys can correct me if I'm wrong. I do think it has to be specific to that office. So if you buy it in one, use it in that same one. I could be a little off on that. So, we'll kind of pay attention to what our team is saying, but any of the PM offices, you can, get a gift card. I do believe, and I'll correct myself. There we go. Katie Lynn saying they have them in Bristol. That's perfect. That's perfect. Thank you guys. And then this next one here, this is our last question. Then we'll get to the live, the comments here for live live questions. This is actually something managed that we got. We talked a little bit last week around sleepy girl mocktails is kind of a thing, and we talked about organic tart cherry juice. There was a magnesium powder mentioned, and people who were with us last week might remember. Trying to think if there's any, what magnesium powder would you recommend for if you're trying to go to sleep to put into like a nighttime drink to kind of put you to sleep? And organic tart cherry juice did come up last week. I'm certain about that.
Yeah, tart cherry is cool. Yeah. I've used tart cherry. I believe tart cherry can be good for prostate. Isn't that right? I forget. Tart cherry is good. Magnesium powder. I love magnesium. I usually don't do it in powder form. I usually do it in pill form. I like the Life Extension one. I like anything that's going to be a brain magnesium. So the attachment matters. So I would look at like one that has oxide in it or threonate or glycinate. Mm. Citrates mainly for movement. The others are going to be more for sleep, blood pressure, calming. So I'd say finding one that's more of a calming magnesium or a brain magnesium in any of the powder forms, I think would be fine. Dosing, I don't do anything less than 500. I really don't. And sometimes up to like two of them, 500 to 1,000. It may make you go to the bathroom, which in a lot of the cases, it's a good thing. Going to the bathroom is getting rid of toxins. That's waste. So you want to go to the bathroom. So I think at least 500, looking at one that has an attachment that's a brain attachment. But sleepy girl mocktails, have you trademarked that? Because that's awesome. Is that like a thing?
I think it's a thing. I think like there is.
Someone needs, that's a great name. Sleepy girl mocktails.
There's a lot of content around just different things, different processes to get better sleep, which we're all after. I'm interested if anybody's doing anything kind of cool. Let us know in the comments.
Or two, like if you find something that you like that works for you, we want to know, especially for sleep. That's amazing.
I see Kelsey's in here. What's going on, Kelsey? Great to see
Kelsey.
You.
Oh, Kelsey. I keep promising Kelsey and Katie I'm coming to Bristol. I am. I'm in Bristol with you right now, okay? Right now. This doesn't count. I'm going to come see you. 2024 is our year, okay?
There you go. There you go. Lisa, I see you. Great to see you in here. Guys, we're going to the live comments. So if you guys got questions for Andy, go ahead and put them in there, and we will get to every single one this evening. Let's see. Let's start with Ray. Ray, I appreciate you being here tonight, man. I've been reading about the benefits of ashwagandha for type 2 diabetes. Is it safe to take along with metformin and Januvia? What's your thoughts on this, Ange?
Yeah, I think absolutely. Yeah, ashwagandha is great. It's going to be an adaptogen. It's a healthy balancer. People will use it for estrogen type symptoms. Like if women don't want to take estrogen, they'll take ashwagandha because sometimes it can help with temperature relief. It kind of calms you. So I think that's fantastic to take with both. I do not see that being an issue either way. Metformin's a big one. It works against glucose production from the liver or glycogen breakdown from the liver and also sensitizes insulin. Januvia gets sugar into the urine and you pee it out. So I think that's a great thing. Anytime too, you're going to have a cortisol balancer. Cortisol and glucagon or glucose all work together. So anytime you're going to decrease that, you're going to decrease the other. So that's a great one, Ray. And I think you absolutely should.
Thank you, Ray, for putting that in there. Great question. Let's get to the next one here. And if I miss somebody, I will definitely come back. I'm just, sifting through where my next question is. Let's see. Let's go to my brother Steve from Digest Shield is asking, what is an ideal testosterone level for an active man in his mid-60s? What's your thoughts on this, Andrew?
So two, range of normal. Oh, Steve, it's so nice to see
you. It's so good to see
you. You are your name. You're the nicest of the nice.
Yep.
Steve's the best. And two, Steve, y'all got to do Digest Shield at A4M last time.
Yep.
Digest Shield is amazing. Ideal testosterone level, in my opinion, is what you feel good at. So I think optimal range is going to be on the higher end of normal. Labs change. So since I've been practicing I'm in my fifth year of practicing. The levels have changed. So 250 to 1100 is what I've started off with. And some values say that 150 to 750 is normal. So I think being in the 700s, 800s, 900s as consistently as you can without peaks and valleys and without conversion into estrogen, dihydrotestosterone, or thickening your blood. So I think shoot for the 700, 800s with feeling good. Or even higher than that, if you feel good at 1100 and it's consistent and you're not converting and blocking it, I think it's amazing.
Out of curiosity, and I'm sure there's someone in here who's probably thinking,
this is,
go ahead.
This is also if you're replacing it. Like a natural level for a man in his 60s might not be, probably won't be there. You're probably going to look into replacement. I'm talking about replacing it.
When you're in the room with the patient and you mention those numbers and they've been told forever that, you know, if they're in the 250 range, that's normal for a 60-year-old. Or if they're 300s, you're normal. Are they shocked at those numbers? Because those numbers are high. You know, 800, I'm sure would seem high to people. How do they normally respond?
It just depends on the patient too. Yeah. And depends on the baseline symptoms. It's shocking to me when they're like, I've been told that my testosterone is normal. And then when I look at it, I'm like, well, you're on an A to F scale, you're making a D minus.
Yeah.
Like, sure. You're
barely, not failing.
You're not completely flunking the class. But what's more interesting though, is when people don't feel symptoms. I've checked that before where it's like, 28-year-old has a testosterone of 150 and doesn't feel it. It's like, are you sure you don't feel bad? Don't want to leave the patient that way. But that's it's very interesting. It's more interesting that way when the testosterone's a little bit on the lower end for someone you wouldn't expect of it because of their age and they don't have symptoms.
That's interesting.
So that's a little bit of a harder conversation of like, well, what do you want to do with that? You don't feel bad. And if you start testosterone, then like you're going to kind of be stuck on it because you're decreasing your basal supply of testosterone if you do it exogenously or outside of your body. So I think that's a tougher one. But two, testosterone hits receptors. It hits your muscle. It hits your brain. It hits your gonads. I mean, it's everything. So I think too, I'm always, people are always surprised too about how much better they feel when they get it to an optimal level.
Steve, thank you so much for that question and prompting that, that conversation. I'm going to move here to, YouTube with Alyssa. And I'm just, if Alyssa doesn't mind, I'm going to give Andy a little context. Alyssa, this has nothing to do with her question, but I want Andy to know what we've done is, we sent Alyssa a copy of Andy and the Beast that should be arriving sometime soon.
Oh, nice.
And correct me if I'm wrong, Alyssa, I think it's your daughter who was just diagnosed within the last, couple of weeks. Do you have any words of encouragement for her daughter who just got diagnosed? I know you're, I'm putting you on the spot, but she's going to be reading your book, which is, plenty of encouragement, but, I just want you to know who Alyssa is.
So nice. And too, I see it in the comments. It's your son.
Oh, son. Sorry. Okay. Son. Okay.
Alyssa, well, first off, I'm honored that too, you have the book. Yep. That's exciting.
She will have the book.
I did that project a really long time ago. I wrote it about 15 years ago and wrote it originally as a musical and turned it into a children's book to make it a little bit more accessible to people. But so much of what I learned about having a sister with type 1 and then living with it with myself is that it's very hard to describe exactly how it feels because, and I've been lucky and fortunate that this is a disease that's manageable, but also tough enough so that that you really do can really create some empathy. But my real thing is, I'm really sorry. I mean, it's not easy. It's not easy for him, but it's really hard for parents.
Yeah.
'Cause I know too, even you just being on Alive right now in your free time to learn about medicine means that you care. And I know in a heartbeat that you would take this from him if you could. And that's really a lot of what the story is about, is a lot about the mother's experience with having a son with type 1 is really what the story of Andy and the Beats is about in the longer version of it.
Yeah.
So my heart goes out to you. I'm really sorry. I hate you're going through this, but there is so much hope in type 1 diabetes. This is the thing that they want to prevent type 1 diabetes. I know they want to cure it. And the treatment modalities are getting so much easier. Insulin was it's been a treatment. It's not a cure, but it was discovered 100 years ago. That's 100 crazy. Years ago, we all would have, I would have been long dead. Kelly, my sister, would have been long dead. Like, they just kind of sent kids to starve. Now we have Dexcoms and Omnipods and like 7,000 different types of insulin. So I think I'm in a really hopeful state for it. But I think that 100%, I think you and your son are allowed to have whatever grieving process you want to have for a life that you thought you were going to have. And just know that there's so many resources. I'll be a resource for you, but I'm also going to be your biggest cheerleader.
Yep.
That blood sugars are not going to be perfect. They will not. And it's going to change every day, but he is going to be just fine. Yep. And I know somebody, we have a great interview with Sheila Michaels that you should watch. She got diagnosed when she had her third child and has been living with type 1 diabetes for a really long time. She's seen a lot of different changes.
Alyssa, I hope that helps. And Ange, thank you so much for
but kudos for to you. To what that. A good mom. God, like, you're a mom who cares. It's awesome. That's awesome. But to, like, allow yourself some time to grieve too. It's within a couple weeks. I remember my first couple weeks diagnosed at 15, they kind of put you on a standard insulin titration based on your weight, and it was a lot. So I was dropping low a ton. So I know it'll be a little wonky, or especially if he's going through his, honeymoon phase, which he most likely is depending on his age. He might have like really, really optimal. I would say, without telling him this, I would get in the habit of saying in range, out of range, optimal blood sugars, not good or bad. So much of the time, if you start off on that habit right now, and two, not saying I am a diabetic, but I have diabetes, you start to not personify yourself with your disease state, which also too, allows you not to think my blood sugars are bad, therefore I'm bad. That's like 19 years of undoing of, oh crap, my blood sugars freaking suck. I suck. What did I do? Not, hey, my blood sugars are out of range. What was the obstacle that I had in the way today? Oh, I counted a little under. It's like, if you take away some of that, like, I'm bad, my blood sugars are bad, or my blood sugars are good, then that's really going to save his psyche with it and yours too. In range, out of range, optimal, non-optimal. And he keeps dropping low. That's probably because they're doing it weight-based. And there's a particular calculation. Literally, you can Google the calculation. They take your total daily dose, I think divided by four, and then you're 50-50 with what basal bolus looks like. I think it's within kilogram. I forget the exact calculation. But two, I would err on the side. You want to fix lows first and then fix highs second. So I would say, I'm not his provider, but I would decrease his insulin. If he keeps dropping low, decrease his insulin. You'd rather run a little bit high, especially for a young guy, than run a little bit low.
That's awesome.
And decrease his basal by a couple units, and then his carb ratio is probably a little bit tight. I'd decrease it a little bit. And two, like he might be sensitive to insulin, but yeah, you're doing great. This is great.
Andrew, thank you so much for that. And Alyssa, thank you so much for being here. And I hope that helps. And let's, I do want to get this for Alyssa. This is a question for her. Let's get this. And the question is there any benefits to taking saw palmetto for women's hormonal balance? What's your thoughts?
Yeah, primarily I see it with men, but you're going to look at saw palmetto and pumpkin seed for testosterone to dihydrotestosterone. That kind of works on 5-alpha reductase, that enzymatic process for DHT accumulation. So I could see it being beneficial if you find that you're losing your hair from taking testosterone. If you are a patient with PCOS who has naturally higher testosterone, that can help balance it by decreasing the DHT conversion. It's not a super common one I see among women, but I don't see it being harmful and potentially beneficial. I would think about it for hair. We think about it for men for prostates. Women don't have prostates.
All right, Alyssa, I hope that helps. Thank you for putting that in there. Let's get to Mark's question over on YouTube. Dimethyl fumarate activates the NRF2 pathway, offering protection to the retina, mitigating diabetic complications. DMF has a positive effect on diabetic glycemia by regulating blood glucose level in type 1 diabetes. And what are your thoughts on this as a possible treatment? I hope I didn't mess any of that up. Might have mispronounced some things, but this is another type 1 question. What's your thoughts?
That's Mark for the win. Mark's amazing and probably smarter than anybody that works at our office. So I honestly don't know about this as a novel treatment for type 1. This is new to me, so I'd like to look it up. And Mark's really good at getting us to look up stuff, which is amazing. Yeah. I think it's used. Is it used for multiple sclerosis? Isn't it like an autoimmune? Is DMF like an autoimmune thing? If it is, it's probably working against the antibodies. I would have to see if it's a DMARD or a biologic, or if this is something completely different. But I know some of the treatment modality with type 1 diabetes is to prevent it by preventing the beta cell destruction. So you have type 1 diabetes, you have beta cell destruction by antibodies, and it's usually four very particular ones, IAA2, there's zinc transporter 8, GAD65, and another one I can't think of right now. Those work against the beta cell. So they're using a lot of these biologics to prevent the progression of beta cell destruction. If that's what this is, that's a lot of the companies have this in the pipeline or something like this. I don't know if it's used after the fact, if you already have total beta cell destruction. I know what they're looking at for post-antibody beta cell destruction. You're kind of done with diabetes, or you're like fully type 1 insulin dependent. They're looking at stem cells that are not going to be attacked by your own bodies, kind of having a sheath around the stem cells. But this, maybe this is, if Marga, any information you want to give would be awesome. I believe if it's a biologic, it's to prevent the progression of, which too, if you're decreasing your immune system, which is what biologics do, you're also decreasing your immune system. So at the same time, you're not letting those antibodies go and attack beta cells, but you're decreasing all of it, which can make you prone to other things. So I think too, it's probably, it's more risk benefit about what the patient wants. Is it better to be on insulin and be insulin dependent, or to be on a biologic with possible resistance to that biologic at one point with higher risk of having infection? I don't know. That's a risk benefit question.
Mark, thank
that's
you.
That's a great man, Mark. That's good.
Mark, thank you for putting that in there. And we'll get more information on that. And I'll have to check my email here in a second too, because Mark's he's on top of it.
I don't know a lot about. I know that they've used the TB vaccine. I had a doctor that I was rotating with that wanted to give me the TB vaccine. MS autoimmune. Okay, so yeah, used for autoimmunity. I don't know if, enough about it. I don't.
All right, let's go.
Did I tell you that? They tried to put the TB vaccine in me?
No.
I said no, because then you have to get like a chest x-ray because you pop positive for a TB test. So I was like, no. But that's apparently used in Europe, son.
Let's get to Facebook here with Michelle. Michelle, what's up? Great to see
you.
What's up?
Oh, Mama Michelle.
Well, she's wanting to know what's good for weight loss. And I'll let you kind of, you know, riff a little bit, but maybe talk a little bit about Zepbound. Zepbound's out this week or in the past couple weeks. Robin did explain this episode on it. So let's talk a little bit about the GLPs and the GIPs.
So those are incretin hormones. Those are actually found outside of the gut, but primarily in the gut to help in gastrointestinal motility and to sensitize insulin. People feel fuller faster, have decreased appetite, and also send out less more robust insulin in response to food. Nearly everybody loses weight on those. It's a great thing that's for postmenopausal women too. It's very hard to lose weight postmenopausally, especially for women where they're very estrogenic for their entire lives. Estrogen loves fat, testosterone loves muscle. Weight loss, the GLP GIP1 class is amazing, or GLP1 GIP class is amazing. Tirzepatide and Zepbound. Zepbound Mounjaro is tirzepatide. That is a combination of GLP-1 GIP. Semaglutide is Ozempic and Wegovy. That's the molecule they use, and that is just GLP-1. There's three gastrointestinal peptides. There's a third one that I don't know the exact acronym for it now, but there's one that's a triple G action that has even more weight loss. So I think that's absolutely the best medical route for it. But nothing is as good as movement. You gotta move. You gotta get outside. You gotta do something. And two, you gotta move and you gotta eat well. It doesn't mean you have to eat perfect, but you gotta move. I saw much of that conference this weekend. Like, they talked about exercise snack breaks. It was super cool. They're like, get up for 45 seconds right now and do something. And just, you know how you like find your 20 and do knee ups. We don't move nearly as often. And look what I'm doing right now. I'm leaning back in this chair. Like, this is so bad for your back. Like, chairs. There's this whole book on chairs about how bad it is for your health. And so this is totally messing me up because it's crooked. No medicine can replace movement.
So were they focused heavily on movement at the conference?
No, I mean, they did a lot of different things.
Right.
A lot of it was on methylene blue. Whew.
You know, this crew here tonight, our live Q&A show.
Methylene blue is the bomb.
We love the methylene blue. We love the methylene blue.
The MB, everybody and their mamas should be on MB unless you're pregnant or breastfeeding. You shouldn't do it. But it's amazing. That was mainly what the conference is about. But what's good for weight loss, start with basics first. Medicine can only go so far. Medicine can definitely get you the weight off, but habits are going to keep it off. And so people don't move. There was this one slide that Dr. Oz put up, and it's a 24-hour fitness in LA, and it had a staircase and an escalator, and everyone was using the escalator to go to the fitness. It's like, he's like, this does not make sense. It's like, why would you not use the stairs? And two, I wouldn't even think about it. Be like, oh yeah, escalator. It's like, we take the easy way out so much.
Yeah.
We gotta move. So what's good for weight loss is habits first. Change your habits first, but two, to push you down the hill, I think using the Ozempic, Mounjaro, Zepbound, Wegovy, any modality that you can get for a reasonable cost that you tolerate well. That would be what I'd say.
Michelle, thank you so much for being here. Great question. We're going to keep talking about those topics. I see Carly's in here. Carly, so good to see you. Thank you for being here.
Oh, Carly. Oh, Carly. Red House, baby.
We love you. We love you. Thank you for being here. We're going to get to a couple more. I want to get to as many as I can. Let's see. Let's get to Stevens. Stevens asking, I've had migraines since I was 8 years old, currently taking Nurtec. What are your thoughts on Botox for migraines?
Botox for migraines is amazing. Absolutely. I would say get it through your insurance if you can, especially if you had some treatment failures. Neurologists can do that, so where they just inject all along the scalp. They can inject down the trapezius muscle, which is really cool. They can do masseter temporal muscles for TMJ, and you have to use a lot of units. If you're paying out of pocket for that, it's going to cost a lot. And you want an injector that's trained more to do it for migraines than rather just for cosmetics. But if you do it in the frontalis muscle, it will help with headaches. It kind of depends on where you get it. The idea behind Botox is it's a toxin that relaxes muscles. That's what it does. So it's a toxin that relaxes muscle. And if it relaxes muscles, you're not getting tension headaches. Migraines are a little bit different within the pathway that works. But anything that's going to alleviate tension to decrease the inflammatory cascade is good. That's what Nurtec does. It works on CGRP receptors, which is a big inflammatory process within migraines. It's almost like putting out a main fire so the other fires don't go out. Mm. I like Nurtec in the Ubrelvy Nurtec Qulipta class. I think is really good. But thoughts on Botox is a yes. I would say probably going to see most benefit if you get it from a neurologist through insurance. And two, tell them you get it in your forehead and they'll do your forehead. why not?
Little pro tip. I love it.
Pro tip, tell me, it's like, hey, my migraines are definitely here, but 100% here, here, and here. And get a free Botox treatment.
Steven, I hope that helps. I see Jasmine's in the building. Jasmine, our esthetician in Knoxville. So good to see you. So good to see you. Thank you for being
here. Jasmine,
with us
I can't tonight. Wait to hear. Jasmine went to a conference too. We've been on the conference trail. She went to our Cartissa conference in Atlanta. So I can't wait to hear about that too, to learn about the machines. That's the radio frequency microneedling machine. They have the physique. We have a new CO2 laser in Johnson City for a skin retexturing, which is insane.
Yep.
You'll never look better. Jasmine already looks good. I'm not talking about you, Jasmine. You look amazing, but Jasmine, everybody else can look
being
better.
Being here tonight. Let's get to, I love this question from Alyssa. It has to do with, the recent diagnosis. What recommendations do you have in relation to my son playing sports with type 1 diabetes? Should we limit it until his blood sugar is more stable? This is very contextual. Great question. You're the perfect person to answer it. What's your thoughts?
No. I would just have things ready to go in case his blood sugar gets low. It may depend on his age, on how he's dealing with it mentally, but taking him out of any activity, it might send the message that, hey, no, you can't do that. A kind of sad story, but when Kelly was diagnosed, probably 3 years after she was diagnosed, Kelly was really into basketball. We were all kind of into basketball, and we had a really good girls team in middle school, and the coach told her she didn't make the team because he thought she couldn't handle it with her diabetes. I mean, and that makes you hate. He point blank told her that. And I'm just going to take, she's in her 30s now and she remembers it. So I think anything to do to keep activities normal, sports, dance, shows, don't keep them out of anything. Keep them in class. Anytime you try to make them feel, even though I know the concern, so you don't want them to do poorly on the field. You don't want them to drop too much. Totally get it. Just have a ton of juice, Gatorade, glucose tabs, bars. You stock it. Make it fun. Even the coaches, if you have a really good coach, if I were his coach, I'd be like, anytime you need to get a snack, you do it. Anytime you need a break. In school, I used to take diet Coke breaks or You know, sometimes you have to take advantage of the system a little bit. Kelly and I would sometimes just walk around the hall and say we had a low blood sugar. So just so that we could spend time, like, because diabetes is hard.
Yeah.
So sometimes you have to make the best of it. So getting him excited about having it is way more important than am I worried about him being blood sugar stable on the court. I think that comes later. And just be prepared for lows, decrease. I would try to get rid of the lows first. I'd honestly decrease some of the insulin that I would take with that. Even to preparing for sports, just so that you know this, weight bearing exercises will increase your blood sugar because it stimulates glucagon and cortisol, and cardiovascular exercises like running, that would drop his blood sugar. So it depends on what he's doing. Soccer, long distance, cross country, that's going to be more low blood sugar. Even I think I really dropped more during, you'd rather run high than low during sports. So I'd say bring everything out on the court with him. Don't take him out of sports at all. Get him right on out there and get him excited that, like, hey, there's professional athletes with type 1 diabetes, actors, celebrities have it. And like getting him excited about it is way more important.
Yep.
Even too, there's going to be a thing where they might push a dog on you, like the diabetes dogs that track your blood sugar, which is really cool and expensive. I found that it alienated kids. No kid can touch that dog or get near it. And so you want to have this as a normal experience as possible and integrate it into the process, not to where he doesn't talk about it, but to where it's like kids with diabetes can do sports all the time, get them out there. And then too, if he gets a low blood sugar, recognize it, teach him how to recognize it. That shaky feeling you're feeling, it's a good thing you're feeling it because you want to feel those things to stop what you're doing and treat it. Mm. That's a great question. Oh, that's a great question. My heart is breaking for you. I want to be there to, I don't know where you are right now, but
I'll be your biggest
cheerleader for that.
Yeah. That's a great question.
You
know, for one, these are, you know, great videos that we can do on the Diabetes Tour Guide, just very specific scenarios like that. So thank you for that question, Alyssa. I'm going to put this,
he's going to do amazing. Basketball on track is what I saw. He's going to do freaking amazing. Joakim Noah is a really famous, like basketball player with type 1 diabetes. You can show him that. And he does fine. He's professional. Did he play for the Bulls?
I think he
played for the Bulls.
He did.
So he's a famous type 1.
I see Linda's in here. Linda, what's up?
Linda, what's up?
Great to see you. I see Robin Riddle's in here. Thank you for coming on.
Oh, yes. Oh, Robin, our gut expert. So, too, Robin and I are going to talk about CellCore at one point. I'm really excited. I'm starting CellCore. It's too long to talk about right now, but just get ready. And
we're doing a CGM with her, I think. We're doing
I'm doing CellCore. She's doing CGM.
Got it. Yes. Okay.
So she's doing CGM. Robin cleans my gut out. She's just like, the West Knoxville office, the Fountain City office with Stephanie and Margo, Knoxville team's got, they've got it going on.
Rock on. Shout out to the Knoxville Performance Medicines. Great to see you guys. I want to put this up from Mark because I think it's more of a comment. And then if you have any thoughts, a different product, Mark. I did the whole episode without mispronouncing a word, and he puts this in here:
difluoromethyl ornithine. Woo! Alpha difluoro DMFO. You've told me about DMFO.
Enzyme
that sounds like a DJ. Inhibits an enzyme that plays a key role in cellular metabolism, suppressing the metabolic pathway, help protect the beta cells. Environmental factors, aiming at the possibility of preserving and even restoring these vital cells in patients diagnosed. Yeah, I think throw anything out there to try to preserve beta cells. Mm. Yeah, I think that's a no-brainer if you have beta cell function. You're going to have to catch that early because some people can be in honeymoon for years and some people can be in honeymoon for 3 months. Honeymoon just means that you still have beta cell function. You still have your own endogenous insulin being available. So I think it'd be more important with patients who have C-peptide and have intact insulin on a lab for where you'd get that back. But restoring too, I don't know the process of restoring and how it would make a beta cell, but I mean, I don't see that hurting. Let's do our own clinical trial. I like it. I think that's a great thing. Mark is definitely going to cure something. I'm just going to tell you right now, ladies and gentlemen, Mark is one of the smartest people I know. He's going to cure something so he can do his Nobel Peace prize winning thing on here.
He's I love amazing. It. I love it. Mark, and I'm going to put this up. You know what? Because Carly said it best. There we go.
There's not. Yeah. There's not. That's so true.
I love
and
it.
And two, he thinks about me and Kelly all the time.
Yeah.
Yeah. And Alyssa, he's going to think about your son too with curing type one. He's going to be on it. I do know that too, when I worked in Indo in Atlanta, one of the lead investigators that was down there that I rotated with, he like created the pump. He created the Medtronic pump. He's super smart. He was a diabetologist. They used to not have endocrinologists, they had diabetologists. And he did one where he found antibodies on a really young guy whose mother had type 1 diabetes. So the son was going to get it at one point. He put him on super high dose omega-3s and vitamin D. I don't know the doses. He did not get diabetes for like a decade. And when he stopped taking it and went to college, he got type 1 diabetes.
Whoa.
So, I mean, there is something to do with preserving your immune system, keeping so that your immune system can work against the antibodies that you have. The antibodies are kind of a part of the HLA B27 genomic pathway that kind of creates antibodies. And if you have that genome or that genetic type, you're going to be more predisposed to autoimmunity, and depending on the autoimmunity that you get, and then when you step on a landmine. So, yeah, oh, Lindsay. Oh, yes, I'm telling you. Oh, Omnipods are the best, y'all. Yep. Omnipods are the best. Yes. I'm on an Omnipod as well. Honeymoon lasted a year. Lindsay, you're going to have to be on our podcast. I'm sorry. You just got volunteered. Yep. Now that you put that up there, you're on. You're on.
Lindsay, we'll be reaching out to you.
We will. Get the headphones out. Yeah. We're going to be singing in harmony. So just...
Well, Ange, I can't tell you how much I appreciate you being here. I know everyone in here. There's 39 with us live.
Amazing. Y'all, thank you for spending time with us.
We appreciate you hanging out with us, man. And guys, for y'all hanging out this whole hour, it means the world to us. This is one of the highlights of my week. So thank you guys for doing this with us. We can't wait to be back next week. We got a lot of fun things
here.
Coming up.
We have the dogs.
We're talking about emotional health next week. We're going to have my mom on the podcast, talking about The Body Keeps the Score. Some of you have mentioned that book. Certainly one that we've studied a lot of. There's Todd right there.
This is the best thing for immunity right now. This is a lot of oxytocin right now. Just oxytocin galore and getting dog spit in your mouth, just the best thing you can do for your autoimmunity. I did hear this. Can I say that? I heard a story about, I don't know if this is a new trend, but I know people that just had a baby and they won't let the grandparents touch the baby because they said it's too dirty. Guys, you need to get dirty, okay? That's the best thing you can do for your autoimmunity is to get freaking dirty, okay? There's a difference between like being... like not having a cleanliness about you, but God, we gotta have germs, y'all. Germs help your immune system. Is there, Tammy, is there a blood test for what you just said about the autoimmunity?
I think it's
For type 1?
I think that's what she's talking about.
Yes, for type 1 diabetes, yes. Oh, HLA B27, you can actually test that. That is a blood test. So you can test if you have that genetic pathway. And then every single autoimmune disease, or most of them, not every single one, but most of them have some sort of specific antibody associated. Sjogren's has anti-Ro and anti-La, or anti-SSB and anti-SSA. Oh, God.
There,
this one, too.
Look at there. There's Izzy.
Hi, Izzy. Yikes. You're so sweet. I need to talk more positively to Izzy. You sweet baby. what was I going to say? But with autoimmunity, with type 1 diabetes, there's 4 pretty specific antibodies that are associated with it. And autoimmunity in general, usually you're looking at ANA. There's a lot of ANA positive, like autoimmune diseases. Yeah. So ANA is kind of a good place to see.
Thank you, Tammy, for putting that in there. Oh, I was actually wondering the same thing, which test he was talking
about. That's great.
Yeah,
that's great.
Thank you for that.
Come here, baby.
Do we get Ike in here? We need Ike to close it out. Is he in there?
Here he is.
There we go. There's Big Ike.
Here's a mom's mini doodle, right? Is this a mini? This is a mini, y'all.
I want to put this up here. One, Sherry, thank you so much. That's the kindest statement.
Thank you so much. Sherry. Thank you so much. Thank you all. Ben, you do a good job. You're just Steve's like a regular a Joe Rogan.
She's giving thank us a 10. You, we got Roel's giving us a 10. Thank you, guys.
Ben, you should be Ben Rogan. Ben Rogan.
Ange, I appreciate you, man. Thank you, brother.
I appreciate you, too. Okay, love I love you. Like a brother, okay?
Like a brother. What's that song? He is my brother, and I love him like myself.
Ben singing right now. We have this from our headquarters right now too. Ben singing. What? He's singing a cappella right now.
It's Christmas.
Ben has the gift of song. Ben, you have the gift of song.
Guys, we love you. Thank you all for hanging out tonight. Thank you for being with us each and every Tuesday. We'll be back Tuesday at 7. And I hope everyone, we won't see you before Christmas. We hope everyone has such a Merry Christmas. I hope you're
happy Hanukkah. Yeah. Happy holidays.
The whole shebang.
Happy Kwanzaa.
Yep.
We New love Year.
Angela, love
Shabbat
you,
Shalom.
Where's my outro? Where's my outro from Brad? Come on, Brad. There we go. There's my outro.
Don't go away.
Thanks, guys, for listening to this episode of the podcast. Please share the podcast with your friends. And if you haven't subscribed yet, please subscribe. We will see you guys next time.